You're listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. To support this podcast, go to nakedbiblepodcast.com and click on the support link in the upper right-hand corner. If you're new to the podcast and Dr. Heiser's approach to the Bible, click on New Start Here at nakedbiblepodcast.com.
Welcome to the Naked Bible Podcast, episode 120, Fern, Audrey, and Beth. I'm the layman, Trey Strickland, and he's the scholar, Dr. Michael Heiser. Hey, Mike, we got another special show this week.
Yeah, we do. This will be a good one. I don't think we can oversell that point at all. I think listeners will be fascinated by what they hear today, get a little bit of an update from Fern and Audrey, and then get introduced to Beth and her story, which, again, I think listeners will just be really, you know, riveted by some of the details there and really see what Fern and Audrey and Beth do in a different context. So why don't we just, you know, get right into it? I mean, we do have with us, of course, you know, with Trey, there is Fern. Fern is with us. Audrey is with us again, and Beth. And we'll get into Beth's story and who she is shortly. But before we do that, I wanted to give Fern and Audrey a chance to talk about what's been happening. You know, give us a little bit of an update as far as people who've been helped by the contributions to the GoFundMe campaign, and again, just you know, some of the things that have resulted because of listener and donor generosity. So, Fern, why don't you just jump in here and give us an update?
Yeah. Hi, Mike. Hi, Trey. It's good to be here with you guys again. And Audrey and I are overwhelmed by the contributions that have come in. We have done 45 hours of ministry to survivors with the funds that have come in. 24 hours of that was used for intensive time where people came to us for days at a time, 3-4 days at a time. We've even spent a number of hours mentoring other prayer ministers, therapists, and pastors online. We've ministered to folks from London, New Zealand, Philippines, in the United States here, Ohio, Missouri, Texas, Alaska, California, and Colorado.
Wow.
So, yeah, we've been busy. Thank you for everyone's help.
Yeah, that sounds like you've been busy. Mm-hmm. Boy, so what can you describe kind of the stage or stages where some of these people are at, beginning stages, you know, how far along, and again, what kind of terminology would you use for where people are at? Just give us an idea.
Typically, when we're when we get an email from someone, we have every the gamut from just, hey, I think this is me, or I think this is someone in my family, to crisis situations where people are trying to get free from actively being in a cult situation. And so it is the full gamut of just kind of thinking maybe I've had some trauma to, hey, I need help. Some of my loved ones are caught in a cult and we can't get to them.
Mm-hmm.
And typically we find that when we do get an email and we call them back and say, what can we do to help? What do you need? The Skype calls are good connection points. They get to meet me. They get to meet Audrey. And they can start the process of just understanding dissociation and trauma. The real work happens once they get here. So, and that is what is so costly, is to get here. So oftentimes they have the flight that they need. 4 days of ministry or so is thousands of dollars. And so we encourage them, yes, we're going to do that Skype work, but can you look at your calendar and commit to the time of an intensive time here with us? Right now we have someone from the Philippines that needs to get here and doesn't have the funds to get here. We have folks that have been here for intensives that need to come back before the end of the year, and they don't have the funds either to get back here again. So the need is ongoing, and it is a big need to get here for the intensives.
Yeah, I should mention here too, the folks at allaboutgod.com are helping sort of raise awareness, not only just for what you do, but this ministry and the GoFundMe campaign. And we got recent statistics from that webpage. It's a single web page. I wrote a lot of it with Fern and Audrey's help. And they had, I'm looking at it now here, almost 4,000 unique visitors since April to that page. So I'm not sure exactly how they're finding it, but I know a couple of places they definitely find it are on, you know, my website. So if it gives you any indication, there are people who visit that site and read through the whole thing. I mean, we can measure that, and there are a lot of them. Sure, some of them, I'm sure, are just curiosity seekers, but the way that page is set up and the way it's sort of positioned on the All About God website, most of the people who are going to click on that, there's something in the way that the subject and the page is introduced that is going to sort of trigger a thought in their head, like, oh, this might be me, this might be, you know, somebody I know. So, I mean, that's a lot of people, you know, even for a page that, you know, we don't do really anything more than, you know, just have the GoFundMe page live on the website to direct people there. But there are a lot of people, you know, who are winding up there. So if that's any indication, I'm sure the numbers don't surprise you guys. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely a need out there. One last question before we get to Beth. Again, has your recent experience with the people who've, you know, found you again in the wake of the GoFundMe campaign, is it consistent, you know, with your observations earlier? Most of these people are believers or in ministry. Is that true? Is that bearing out again?
Very strongly. It's I would say over 50% are in leadership in ministry.
Wow. That still surprises me every time I hear it, but I don't know why it would. But yeah, that it just still, it's still kind of shocking. Mm-hmm. But let's introduce Beth. Now, it might be a good idea to have Fern and Audrey introduce Beth, because Beth is connected to the two of you in various ways. So if you could do that for us a little bit, and then Beth, we will let you run with it to tell your story and again, fill in gaps and details as to who you are and what you do and your whole story.
I would love to introduce Beth. She's a dear friend of Audrey and mine. And I think, Beth, how many years ago was it? Was it six or so? Five?
I think it's about six now. Almost. Yep. Almost six. Yep.
6 years ago, Beth called Audrey and I for help with a gal she was working with. And she can tell that part of the story, that she's called many different ministries. And she got a hold of Audrey and I and was asking for help. And it is from that phone call that we have worked closely together with her, and her love for survivors has really grown. Her skill sets are right on par with what is needed, and it's an honor to be journeying with her in the front line and helping people. So, Beth, we're really excited that you're here with us.
Yeah. Thank you, Fern.
I would have to say, meeting Beth the first time, she has the heart of Jesus in her that the survivors are drawn to. And that's what is needed for their freedom.
Well, Beth, why don't you pick up from there? And trust me, we are all, I mean, we've heard parts of your story. I have. I mean, I know Fern and Audrey know the whole thing. So what I've already heard, I know listeners are going to just, again, be riveted by, but, you know, give us the full bore here, you know, go into it.
Okay. Well, you know, in talking with Fern and Audrey a little bit about what should this look like today, and really because we've known each other for 6 years and worked in very personal situations and grown to know and love each other a lot, and they really have come to understand what my life has looked like from a little girl to now. And that has been a full range of experiences that really, even present time, I'm still walking into recognizing how big some of those understandings are at this point. I decided to share a little bit about what that's looked like for me from the earlier part of my life on, because it gives context. So while I probably won't talk about a lot of those specific details, it's going to be important to understand the mindset that I grew up in, the atmosphere. I grew up in a loving home with a father who is a pastor of a large church. In that, when I was about 12 years old, there was a woman who came to him for help who was a member of a local coven, and that was his first experience with any kind of active Satanism or occult type activity, and he didn't have any idea about it. He was not the pastor of a charismatic denomination, so this was brand new for all of us. In that, we began a journey of understanding of really the reality of the spiritual realm in this world, saw before our eyes what that can look like, and then walking through the lessons of what we thought was how best to help people who struggled in those ways. So as I grew up, that was not out of the norm. From about age 12 on, you know, there was a close-knit group of people around my dad who loved him through learning that ministry. And I've known and loved Jesus since I was 10 years old. And I would say that I've really always been passionate about him. So I had a real interest about the reality of what my dad was doing. And I think at mostly appropriate times, he would add to those, to that understanding the best he could. There was a point in time, though, in his life where the numbers of people that needed help grew dramatically. His, I don't really love the word popularity, but he was well known in the deliverance realm, I guess. And so he was featured on a number of networks, and he was sought out for help, and he would also get contacts from around the world sometimes. And at one point, he was approached for help, and that individual situation spurred a number of events over the next, I mean, it's probably been 17 or 18 years now, which included what I would categorize as signs and wonders and just a ramping up of the spiritual experience that we ended up experiencing under the umbrella of the church, but took an avenue in our lives that at this point we understand was very deceptive. Now, I haven't come to understand what all of that meant for me, even though I had walked myself into truth. I didn't have really the understanding about what all of that meant for me until I met Fern and Audrey. So,
let me break in one second here. Are you saying that something was happening to deceive you or your dad, or that you were engaged in something that you didn't know at the time was a deception or was being used, in a negative way?
The situation with my family in working with a small group of these people ended up being things like, we witnessed with our eyes superhuman strength, people, you know, getting thrown off of chairs, Christians who would have physical presentations of being able to supposedly discern evil and the difference between evil and good by holding an object or by, you know, speaking words that were coming from presumably angels or God himself or whatever that looked like in the situation. It was a very confusing time because we were seeing signs and wonders with our eyes and lots of prophecy, visions, dreams from a small group of people, including ourselves sometimes. And yet an end goal, well, for one, I'll just give one example, was to end up being my parents' divorce. Things got very muddled as far as what we were being called to do, asked to do. There was the work that Daddy was doing very specifically through a very small group of individuals who were coming for help. Voices through those people would present as fallen angels who had a desire for redemption, basically. Mm-hmm. In that, the physical manifestations and the signs and the wonders were really sweeping us up and having a real conflict on our hands, because scripture and what it looks like in whole versus in part, and what we were being shown and what we were being told, and on and on and on, and how that evolved and got bigger and bigger. And then there was to be this purpose of the divorce of my parents and how that was supposed to weed into this whole situation.
And so we ended up— one moment. So you're saying, what you used the word goal earlier. Mm-hmm. So what I gather from that is you're saying that these entities, these manifestations, whatever you want to call them, you believe now were engineering the circumstance to have your parents be divorced. Like they were essentially maybe not told to do that, but you think they were in— there was an intelligence there that was trying to destroy their marriage. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's part of what I'm saying.
Okay.
The other is that it's really not about just a marriage. It's really about the total picture of— we love Jesus and we're strong Christians and pastor of a large church. And the torment and the conflict that we went through, even in the decisions that they were making around this, to be coming from such a solid background and a solid mindset about what truth is, and to have the manifestation of these things happening in front of our eyes that over time managed to take us down a path that was very deceptive, is really important for us to understand. And that's actually the only reason why I choose to talk about this today. Because as much as the folks who are coming for help and for ministry with Fern and Audrey and with myself need to be able to tell the difference between truth and deception and what the present times are looking like, it is as equally as important for the church to have that awareness.
And Beth, you're referring to like divine revelation that you were experiencing in your family and the church.
Yeah. Divine revelation, what the church would call spiritual giftedness. And the Bible references that too, but, whatever our current focus is on how we believe the reality of the spiritual realm shows up today, and how the true Jesus lives out life in our daily lives and shows himself consistently, we've got to be able to intertwine the both in truth and stay in truth. Because in this country, we don't see a whole lot out in the open or out in our church services or whatever, as far as, wonders and healings and that kind of thing that some other countries are more acclimated to. And I think that in this country, we can really be caught unaware and get swept up in that. And we can understand, when we understand how deception is working, then we can have the tools and the capacity to realize, stand back and pull together with other people, like how we talk about things and how we want to understand, okay, are we staying in truth? And what are we seeing in this pattern? And is this something that stays within the character of God and that kind of thing? Then we're able to identify it and not get swept away with it. Because I really do believe, and I believe wholeheartedly from my personal experience and from the healing journey that my family is having to go through and choosing to go through at this point on the other side, that deception is being used in the world, whether it's in the church and the church thinks that they've got it all right and that they understand it all, or whether it's for the survivors who have basically been through hell on earth and they're going through what they're going through, trying to get free, or whether it's oblivion who, you know, where there's really just living life and don't set up a camp on either side. So on the other side of all of that, when I started doing deliverance ministry myself, and again, actually, I was doing deliverance ministry out of a church that was also not a non-charismatic discipline. And at one point for a few years, I was doing deliverance ministry almost full time. So I have witnessed and been a part of hundreds of deliverances. And at this point, I guess that probably I started ministering in that way probably almost 10 years ago. And like you said, about 6 years ago, I was seeing so many people that I was starting to notice some patterns. And I had been working through on my own a little bit of the something isn't right here, because people would come and they would come for deliverance, and almost all of them will have had some kind of traumatic experience, traumatic childhood, you know, whatever their trauma is, taken them to a place where they believed that they were experiencing dark events. And that looked different depending on who it was. But for me to come from a background where I supposedly understood deliverance and what that was supposed to look like, and working with these people, I would get to the point where I was supposedly dealing with some of the last big guys, like death or like Satan or whatever that was supposed to look like. And those people were not only being re-traumatized because of what was being done to them by whether it be the darkness or whether they had a protective nature about them that felt that they needed to protect because of a number of reasons, but they weren't getting well, not for what they were having to go through in what would be called a deliverance session. And they would be free a couple of hours, a couple of days, and they would be desperate to come back. And, you know, I had really been talking to the Lord about that in my heart of hearts for probably over a year. But I knew that whatever was nagging me, and I guess, you know, when he talks about our burden and our yoke and being easy and light, and I just like, there is no way that this can be what he's talking about. Something's not lining up.
So you began to suspect that something you began to suspect that something you were doing or you had been doing, you know, you sort of, you know, you're going through the steps of what you again thought were, you know, was normal because you had, you know, done this before and had success, but you began to suspect that there was just something disconnected there. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, because you know what? I love people. I've always loved people. My parents, when I was a little girl, would tell me that there was something about how, I mean, I would be a little girl and I would know that some grown man was sad, and I would tell them, you know, or I would point things out to them. They said I always just had this knack for that. And in fact, I had wanted to be a veterinarian. And one of my life-changing events was my mom and dad sitting me down and not changing my mind for me, but talking to me about my heart and my gifts for the Lord and people. And it was my decision to change my direction there. And even though in my heart of hearts, I was always wanting to do good and help and felt like, okay, there must be a reason why I've had some understanding about this and why our family's been through what we've been through, and on and on. And however we do that in our brain and try to make sense of things. And so my heart was first and foremost to serve Jesus, but my understanding wasn't what it needed to be. And when I saw people continuing to hurt, not because of what I was doing, but in the understanding of how I was trying to help them, that whole situation was being taken advantage of by darkness. Because you know what? The spiritual realm is really real. We can't deny that. But how in our humanity we see it, perceive it, experience it, interact or not with it, are all very important things to understand. And so when in a deliverance session, the person would get, by their own body, would get yanked around, and it would be tormented all over again. And the body memories from trauma would just be thrown all at once. And it was just over and over again. I see these sweet people suffering, and I'm like, this just has got to be something I'm missing. And so I started refusing to continue. And I said, I need some time for the people that I was working with at the time. I said, I need some time just to kind of figure some things out. And I immediately just started calling a few ministries that I felt had been reputable. And that was an interesting journey. It took about 2 weeks to find Fern and Audrey. In the midst of my daily life, I was making phone calls, waiting for calls to be returned. I was explaining what I was seeing, what was going on, why I was calling. And I had the span of phone calls went from totally heartbreaking, because like that group of people had given up on, like that ministry had given up on this group of people and were on their own path of not understanding well. And to a loving approach, but don't really know what to tell you or resources that I can give you, to finally, you need to call Fern and Audrey. They can help you. So I did. I actually talked first with Fern, and she and I talk about that some. I'll never forget it. It's kind of burned in my memory in a good way. Because it was pivotal. It was like it was a life-changing moment for me. I knew that the paradigm was shifting. Even in that conversation, I knew the paradigm was shifting. She was very blunt with me, and I appreciated it, actually. I loved her immediately because she cared. I could tell that she cared enough about people that at the place of understanding she was at, she could tell me, this is not what needs to be done to help them. And that just began a lot of phone calls back and forth so that I could begin the process of how do I do best what I would like to be able to do for these people who have been through so much. And so at this point, you know, it's been 6 years of learning and training with Fern and Audrey and going up and back from where they are. And then in February, actually finally stepping out of the ministry place at the church that I was going to and opening my own office so that there could be a safe place for the people I see to come to and have my own space. And so that's where I'm at now. That's kind of my very brief timeline.
Other than being stymied, you know, in terms of success in helping people. So other than failure with whatever clients, you know, that you're thinking of when you relate that, that's enough to again, to turn the lights on and say, well, there, something's not right here. But what was it, if you can just give us an idea of what are the sorts of things that, again, turn the lights on in your head in a different way, where you said you could sense even in that conversation the paradigm shifting. Okay, what are some points of the paradigm shift for you? In other words, describe that for our listeners. Okay, here's how I was thinking about helping people before. here's how I think about it now. And here are some of the two or three sort of shift points. What do you do differently now than you were doing earlier?
Okay. If I had time to kind of like write out an outline for that, it would actually be several categories.
Go ahead. You can sketch them for us.
Okay. So, for one, I think one of my biggest learning experiences through this has been a sense of myself as a strong Christian person who loves Jesus for real. What it felt like to go through the stages of that journey and actually even think that I had a humble heart, think that I was in a position to help somebody any better than the next person would be able to. Even though I felt like I was pouring my life into this and I love Jesus big, and the love Jesus big piece never changed. That was always the same. But it was really the only thing that was the same, because my beliefs around what I had experienced were totally different then than my beliefs around them now. And when I started realizing truth, see, when I said no more, and I've got to get some help to understand what's really going on here, I had beliefs about what all that would mean for me and my family and what we thought we had sacrificed over the years and what we thought that we had tried to, you know, we had tried to do the best we could. We weren't trying to be disobedient. And if I stepped out of deliverance, that would crumble. And so it's like the truth would defy what I had believed before. But see, at some point, I just faced that and I thought, you know what? I love truth more, even if I understand it better now, than I do holding on to something that isn't true anymore. It never was, but I believed it was. I want truth. I want to be in truth in the moment. And if I grow in truth, I grow in truth. And the good thing is that when we have a network like with Fern and Audrey or other strong people with strong faith who really love Jesus, we're able to bounce off of each other. And then when we hit those milestones, we're able to say, okay, this is different now, but it's going to be okay because we're going to work through it. We're going to understand it. Or like Mike, when, you know, if we throw something out and say, how does this line up? Because that's what the real church does, is we hold each other to truth. And if we get to a point where we realize, hey, we were wrong, or nope, that's not the right thing, then we can say, okay, I got it wrong. How can I grow from that? What am I believing about that that's affecting how I'm being or what I'm doing? So in answer to your question, the first thing is how I felt. Even now in the difference, I feel like when I sat back with Fern and Audrey one time, and again, something that I'll never forget is us sitting in a room with somebody else who was in ministry, and Audrey had told her, she said, that big stuff, you know, that's been with you, you don't have to have it anymore. And it was only the person's will that made it move right back. It was nothing else. It's sitting with people in love and understanding and knowing that the true Jesus, the only uncreated one Jesus, is the strength, the power. He's already done those things. It's how do we align ourselves in love with him next to anybody in life, whether it's someone who's been through the scopes of things like a survivor has, or a friend or a spouse or somebody we don't like. That's the key. And so now it doesn't matter who I might be working with or who I'm with, or if I'm, you know, eating dinner with a friend, it can feel the same because we can be aligned with what the real big love of Jesus is when he defines himself as that. And we grow into existing with him in that, even in our imperfection, then he comes into that and he helps the person.
Beth, would you be okay if I would just kind of unpack some of the things from my perspective when we had our first call?
Yes.
And one of the things that you had mentioned a little bit earlier in our talk today, it was that the place about the fallen angels and stuff, you had kind of mentioned that in the midst of all the supernatural stuff going on with your family.
Mm-hmm.
What I'd like to do is to kind of go revisit that and pull a thread of what we have all walked through in using divine counsel, understanding it in this transition from deliverance to where you minister present day and where we minister. Would that be okay?
Yes.
So when Audrey and I connected with Beth, one of the things that we saw immediately was the bigness of her love for Jesus. And we had the opportunity of meeting her family and knowing her family. And this is a family that is rooted and grounded in good theology and understanding the love of Jesus. They get it. And what Beth had mentioned earlier was one of the deceptions in as they moved into deliverance was the deception came against their gifting, this ability to love with innocence and their ability to love deeply to serve Jesus no matter what. And in that attack of their that gifting was this taunting or this mandate, if you will, from the angels being manifested was that the fallen angels wanted to be redeemed. And what wonderful demonstration of God's love for them, this family, to be used to demonstrate God's love to the fallen angels and will have them walk into the redemption. And when Beth talks about the deception that entered, that's what is really highlighted. And so when she called us to start journeying with us about how to minister to survivors, folks who are not being helped in a deliverance model, being harmed, in fact, was her words, the very first conversation. She was recognizing already that something was different and something needed to change. And so it was not only in her journey and how she ministered and was and getting a paradigm shift out of deliverance, but with the divine counsel understanding, she knew what watchers and fallen angels kind of looked like and demonstrated and saw the deception in me almost immediately of how her and her family was deceived. And she immediately began to quickly walk in that paradigm shift and say, I want to walk further into the love rather, because she saw that the deliverance model that was offered to them, even under the guise of redeeming falling angels, was the deception that she was under. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so do you think that was a manipulative strategy to get them to doubt something about themselves or about the Lord, about what they believe, because they were going to fail there? Do you think that was the point, or... It was more directed toward the people that she was trying to help.
Yeah, from what we were saw with Beth is that it was how you line it out, Mike, with the divine counsel that we displace the sons of God. It was, we're seeing it as the sons of God directly trying to take humans out because they don't know their position in the divine counsel.
Well, that's interesting. If you can, any of you, let's try to reduce it to a couple sentences. I used to believe X, now I believe Y. How would you fill in the X and Y there? Just give us a couple of examples. Or I used to do X, and now I do Y. But in other words, the change in thinking, the change in approach.
Okay. If I have someone who comes in and they'll think that they're oppressed, or they'll think that they have darkness in them because of something that happened bad to them or a feeling that they have. Well, one of the first important things for them to understand is that the key is an understanding, and that if I'm here with them and alongside them, I'm here to walk with them into understanding about it. And that this isn't about demons being in them or them being bad. But it's about understanding. And that's going to begin a journey of walking truth with that person. And what happens is when it starts that way, you're helping that person initiate and tap into and progress through their own initiative with their own will in connecting with Jesus and connecting with his truth. And they get to feel the reward of them actually walking into that. Instead of it being someone like who thinks they're a deliverance minister, they have to be the one to cast out a demon, or they have to be the one to have some kind of a special spiritual anointing. Mm-hmm. That's just not true. We even work with people who don't yet know Jesus. And even if the person chooses to connect with his or her will to give him a chance, he somehow will show up. It's really, you know, his profound way of speaking and ministering to a person in whatever way that person needs in that moment is real. It has nothing to do with me.
Yeah, my lay perspective on this, I'm trying to, you know, just recently in the Q&A episode, somebody asked a question about what Fern and Audrey do. And again, my lay perspective, and it might sound odd or too simplistic or naive, again, to people in the audience. But when I look at what Fern and Audrey and, you know, Beth, what you guys do, I express it this way. They get people to think well about theological truth. In other words, it's almost like you need your thought processes about biblical theology, some point or points of biblical theology needs rewiring. And we can't rewire it for you. You have to, we can point it at an issue or at a problem, but you have to think better about that. You need to think correctly about that, and we will help you think correctly about that thing, whatever it is. And again, I realize that might sound totally naive to somebody who's, you know, in a, I don't know, is it right to even coin the phrase traditional deliverance ministry? But again, that's my perception of what it is you all do. I mean, at least on the surface anyway. Is that misguided? Is it too simplistic? How would you correct that or reword it?
Fern and Audrey, do y'all want to touch on that?
Yeah, Mike, I listened to your Q&A last time, of course, and I thought you did a great job. I think that is exactly what we do. And I want to just expound a little bit on the bullet points that you've asked for, Mike. And Beth, I want you and Audrey and I have talked about this. I mean, you've gone to Tanzania and you've taught a deliverance model over there years ago. And then you had the opportunity to go back last year and minister in Tanzania, and they saw the quiet, loving difference with miraculous results without the quote manifestations of the spirit, whereas there would be, you know, your arm would jerk or something like that. I think that's what that before and after would be a really good picture of what it looked like in Tanzania when you taught deliverance model and what that manifestation of the spirit of God looked for like for you to know a discerning of the spirit versus last time when it was just, it awed the people and they've asked you to come back and teach.
Yeah. You know, that is a really, profound level of a transitional understanding for me, because to back up a little bit, I had gone in 2010 with our mission team. I'd been asked to go actually because of my understanding about deliverance. So I'd been asked to go and be a part of that because deliverance is actually a culture over there. And so I went back in 2011. They had asked me to go back and teach. And what they did was they gathered over 350 pastors and leaders from the surrounding cities in Tanzania. And they bussed in and they petitioned the government for a water buffalo to feed the people. And all of these people came in and they stayed there at the building. And I would go and lead a seminar on deliverance to all of these leaders. Well, meanwhile, I came back to the States and my life changed because I was beginning to understand what I was beginning to understand. I didn't go back for a couple of years, but last year I went back and, you know, in my heart of hearts, I knew that I was going to find out in that trip if what I had understood was going to be culturally relevant there. Because I'm here doing this work a lot, but can I apply it in their culture with their belief system in Tanzania? I didn't even go for that purpose last, let's see, 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. I went to fill in for someone who couldn't go and do some of the inner healing work. So in seeing lots of ladies and individual sessions over there, there was a gal that I was seeing, and sure enough, she started manifesting, you know, demonic manifestation. And I sat back and I looked at the situation for what it was. And I had my translator, who's a pastor from Kenya, and I had another group of ladies, all Tanzanians except for one other lady from America with me. And I walked that lady through understanding and asking for her own thoughts and for her mind to be her own and why this was happening and why, at what point might she have had the beliefs that she had about this. And everything, all of that stopped. She asked, well, after it stopped initially, she then began to praise the Lord and it looked very much culturally like it does over there. And I gave her some time and then I tapped her on her back and I said, come, let's talk about this some more. And we talked about it and she left with an understanding and she left with an application and she left with something to do to apply to, you know, her children. And it wasn't until the last day in Tanzania where my translator friend, who was my translator during the time I was there. She was actually a pastor from Kenya. And she asked to sit next to me on the bus because it was the last ride. She said, I have to talk to you. And so she sat there and I had not mentioned the incident. I had not talked about what had happened. I had not talked about that I had expected that to happen and that the Lord had showed me what he had showed me by helping that to be completed while I was there. And she said, when I do deliverance, I stand over the person and I yell and I say, get out, and I say what needs to happen. And she says, that woman, she was manifesting demons and she was free and you were holding her hand. Why? And I went through from start to finish why that looked the way it did. And since then, she stays in touch with me. She wants me to go. I am going back, but I'm not going back to Kenya. I'm going to Tanzania. And we're just now working on the group of people that I'll be working with and teaching over there. I'm going to go back and I'm going to teach them the new way. And my hope is that the part of the beauty about our missions over there is that we really do focus on helping the pastors and the leaders and the leaders in the churches and in the communities take the understanding so that they can apply. We don't want to go over there and make a drop in the bucket and then leave. It's not about that. It's how can we share an understanding? And so I'm really excited about that. I feel like that's one of the, I told somebody the other day, I keep getting phone calls from people in the past that I've worked with or whatever. And they're asking me deliverance questions. And I keep having to say, I don't do deliverance anymore, but this is what I do. And I see how he keeps just bringing them back to me and bringing them back to me. And, you know, this is just one big area for me that I'm excited about to go and speak in truth and hopefully be a small part of giving some understanding that will make a huge difference in their life. Because really, when it doesn't, whether it's one-on-one in an office doing deliverance or whether you're living out your life loving Jesus, but it's a culture of deliverance and darkness is showing up and presenting, and you've got the culture of witchcraft and all of that that's rooted there. You know, my heart breaks for the group of people that's being directed by darkness in any way. Because there's nothing merciful about darkness. There's nothing good about, you know, they're going to mix up lies with truth, so it's hard to tell up from down. And I have a real new passionate heart for people of the church, people who love Jesus, who we think and we believe we're doing the best we can. That's true. But we think and we believe that we're right at the place of ministry or service and how we're helping. Yet darkness is somehow involved. We can't trust that. We need to be able to keep thinking and keep talking with one another and keep, you know, bouncing off one another. Is this the right direction, you know? Or we need to not get swept up in the manifestation of gifts either. See, darkness has this huge goal of twisting our giftedness and tapping from our giftedness to somehow, whether it's distract or mislead or torque or use for its advantage. So if we have something at play that we think has some kind of misleading direction, or if somebody says it's demonic, like in Tanzania culturally, you know, there's just a lot of focus on that. We need to understand, why are we focusing on that? How can we help the person in a place of healing? Because their healing and their beliefs, the power is in the belief and standing on truth and standing with them in love. Those are the components.
What I hear again is the root of the problem in helping people is theological, or maybe an incorrect or unhelpful theological focus. So how would you finish this sentence? Again, this is directed at all three of you. The problem is what people believe about fill in the blank. In other words, when it comes to helping people and what, again, seems to be effective as opposed to self-defeating or, again, just a, you know, maybe misguided, whatever the term is. But how would you fill in the blank? The problem is what people believe about blank.
That they have to work out themselves out of captivity. They have to do something. They're not doing it right. They're doing that. Whatever it is that they're connected to or has them in captivity is their fault, and they did something wrong that's like that.
And so that is dealt with by putting what else in the blank?
What
do they need to believe?
That it was already done at the cross, and the captivity of the higher level is they want humanity to be deceived that they are held by them when they can't be held by anything because it's already been done.
So I would also add that whatever the traumatic event was, what does that traumatic event say about me because I survived it?
Mm-hmm. So that's the problem or the solution?
That addressing that is going to show you what they believe and where they're anchored in captivity. Okay, if I had a bad dad and I believe that I'm not lovable, that no one can love me, that is going to give an anchor point to any kind of higher level stuff and to set up a foundation for poor theology to be bred in, hatred, God hates me, and all of that. Because of the trauma, if my daddy wouldn't have done this to me, then that would have meant I would have been loved. I'm lovable. And the reality of it is they are lovable. Their daddy was bad.
So what is the disconnect? Because a lot of these people, as you've said, you know, repeatedly, are Christians, and even, you know, people who have, you know, through the course of their lives are now in a position of Christian leadership. Are they denying what the truth that they need to believe, or can't they see it? I mean, how do we articulate that? What's the disconnect with them? Because you would think that they've come across what they ought to be thinking at some point, but yet they don't. Is it just their experience trumps a good thought process, or what is it?
What happens is the trauma is happening to a child, and the way a child's perception of doing life is, the way the child is developing emotionally and the brain development of the child, they cannot process with reason. They're processing emotionally. You know, if mom's in a bad mood and mom comes in and you know, if I get slapped by mom, that means I'm bad because I got slapped. Because, see, a child can't have a bad mommy because that's too dangerous. So she's got to be bad, and okay, I got slapped. And so it's in the construct of a child's thought. So it is the development of good theology. So here's a child developing the defensive posturing about making sense out of her traumatized world. She has to make sense out of it. You can't live in a trauma without having to make sense. And the easiest thing to make sense out of is that you don't count. You're not lovable. It's your fault. And in purposeful perpetration, that's what they're gunning for, to take out the identity of that child. So when a 42-year-old comes to us and is just starting their journey, you know, they're just finding out that, okay, they're a strong Christian. They came to know the Lord, and they, you know, believe in the scriptures, but they've got this child structure that knows and says something different. And it's the conflict inside that needs to be looked at. It's not as easy as saying, you know, hey, have a new thought. There's trauma processes that and processing emotions and understanding emotions and not being overwhelmed by emotional flooding. It's a journey to walk with the person as they learn how just to be human again.
So a lot of what you can hear, and I think this is helpful for the listeners, because you could have this 42-year-old person sit down in church every week for 10 years, and they're going to hear correct things. But what's missing is, again, this someone else to come alongside and basically unpack and be willing to essentially go through the unpacking process with them. And then, you know, what's missing, I hate to say it, is the human element.
That's right. Absolutely.
You know, because that there's this distance created by pulpit to congregation.
Right.
And I'm not saying that's intentional, but it's the truth is very much third person then. It's something you sort of hear in a detached, passive way, as opposed to, again, this sort of one-to-one engagement, you know, kind of thing, where there can be interaction as opposed to just passive listening or something like that. So, well, that's kind of interesting. You know, what something you just said was one of the more scary things I've ever heard you say. And then this whole thing about the inability to reason. You know, frankly, our culture is reaching a point of predominance where people, I call it the flight from reason. It's almost like they either can't or they don't want to. They're no longer interested in thinking well. I mean, whether they've been trained to do that or what, that's another discussion that's related to this, but that's not a real optimistic thing for me to hear. Cause I just run into that all the time, and it, you know, on the surface, I'm not thinking this is a life trauma issue. I'm just thinking, how in the world can this person just think so poorly? you know, things like that. But yeah, I mean, if you can't, again, think well about truth, and part of doing that is being able to evaluate in a coherent sort of way competing truth claims. If you can't do that, then by definition, that's going to cater to a truth-less system, you know, something like paganism, which is really entirely, you know, based upon experience and things that, you know, your observable senses and all that kind of stuff. There's no evaluation to be made. It just is, you know, and that, again, I just think our culture is sort of, you know, swirling down the hole there, you know, toward that. But again, that's a subject for another time, I guess. Anybody else want to fill in the blank, or do you think the blank was filled in well? The problem is what people believe about what. Anybody else want to offer another?
I guess the only other thing I had thought about was when a little girl or a little boy is getting hurt, or when, as we're adults, we're getting hurt, or we have a traumatizing event, we do come to a place where we believe something about ourselves at that time. And it's really important for people to understand that when they hit a current event that feels hurtful or feels scary, or, you know, takes us down a rabbit trail and it feels overwhelming, that there's going to be hurt and pain that comes from something very similar way back. Because the thoughts and the things that we may believe about ourselves from a child's perspective, or from a place of hopelessness or feeling worthlessness, or, you know, or whatever, are not, we are going to somewhere inside still believe those things into the future as we live out life, until we recognize that, hey, this feels really similar to me, and I want to understand what's true about it and how I was hurt by it. And what did I believe about myself then? But what do I believe now about myself? And that takes some help from people who understand that to get the hang of it. But then you understand, you know what, that's a pretty good lifestyle to live by. And then what we notice is we end up feeling more free and more healed, and you know, our relationships with people are healthier, and it takes time and it takes hard work, but it's so well worth it. And when you say that, Mike, you know, that people don't really want to think about stuff, and I get it. And the thing is that I kind of think that way a lot about people and their relationships, or people and their pain, or people. And I just feel like there's just such a lack of understanding about what would be helpful for that to get better for somebody.
You know, as I, again, listen, you know, to this, I'm, you know, I guess, you know, we need to start wrapping up, or at least heading, you know, toward a conclusion. But I jotted two things down. One, it relates to your story, Beth. Again, I think if I can sort of encapsulate your own transition, if you want to call it that, that you reached a point where you were more interested in believing in some point of truth than defending what you used to think was true at that point. Is that correct?
That included whatever cost that would mean.
Right, right. You just had to come to grips with that and pass that Rubicon, cross that Rubicon, so to speak.
But I'll tell you, I didn't do that by myself. And it took a year of knowing Fern and Audrey and getting a clue myself that they had a clue enough to help me with it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that speaks to even the folks we're working with. It takes some time to say, you know, I want to say, I have kind of paved that road myself with Fern and Audrey and what I shared and how they helped me with truth and understanding. And so that's another piece of it, that when people want to get their healing or feel free or more healthy in life, it's important to find someone that they trust and that they, you know, work off of truth.
Yeah. I mean, that resonates with me because my context is totally different, you know, I had to make that same decision. I mean, that inkling had to germinate in my head. Mm-hmm. And I had to just reach that point where, you know, the way I've expressed it often in interviews is I had to decide I was going to value the text, you know, this thing we call the Bible, more than what someone says about it. Mm-hmm. You know, and I knew that was going to hurt. Mm-hmm. You know, because when you sort of realize it for what it is and what it means, it's like, yeah, that's going to hurt. That's going to be uncomfortable. Yeah. And you can sort of imagine the ways it's going to hurt. But, you know, are you going to land there? Or are you going to land somewhere else? You know, you just have to decide that. The second thing I wrote down was, and this goes back to what you just said a moment ago about getting people to understand, you know, good theology in such a way that it helps them think correctly, you know, about the Lord and about themselves. But it seems to me, again, as you guys have tried to relate, again, how you use, you know, the divine counsel content, you know, the stuff, is that the key is really good theology in terms of telling people or getting people to grasp, this is how God looks at you in, again, this framework, in what we'll call the divine counsel framework. And that is your status and your destiny. In other words, this is to be able to show people, okay, this is how God really looks at you. And you get the concept of imaging, you get the concept of family, you get the concept of belonging with purpose, you know, the whole Edenic model and the restoration of that, all that stuff. It's there's a lot to unpack there, but this is how God actually looks at you. And here's what God plans to do with you because of the way he looks at you. Another way to say it would be, well, consider the dark powers. This is their destiny. And now let's look at your destiny.
Exactly.
You know, who's the winner in this scenario? You know, mm-hmm. But the reason that despite all this stuff that's happened to you, and now you're sort of trapped because of the thoughts you're thinking as a result, and, you know, all this other stuff we're talking about, that never changed the way God looked at you. And, you know, he still looks at you this way and has this destiny in, you know, planned for you. Mm-hmm. And you're actually going to displace them. They're going to be judged by you. They ought to fear you because of your status.
Right.
You know, that you're in Christ. And again, all these theological axioms and biblical statements that go with it. But they ought to fear you. And if push comes to shove, they probably do. But you're vulnerable in so many ways, and so you become a target. You know, again, I didn't write all that down, but I wrote the first sentence down. But
I would
that's
add
just
one,
sort of what goes through my head. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would add one more piece to that. And for every survivor that is coming out of trauma-based mind control with an understanding, the biggest understanding is the perpetrators use the gifts and the calling that Yahweh gave you, and they have vampirized that your gifting and calling, that they use it, and they didn't want you to know that it's really yours. And for kingdom purposes, to walk out the kingdom of heaven right here, this is yours to do, and they never wanted you to know that. That is ignites the survivor to say, oh my word, you mean this is mine? This isn't, I mean, I thought they developed it in me. No, the gifting is yours. They have vampirized it for their use.
So I have a question for everybody. And Beth, if you could give it some advice or truth to the people out there practicing deliverance ministry, what would you say to them that are helping people that are listening to this, trying to find new ways or get new information like you were a year or so ago before you met Fern and Audrey? So do y'all have any advice for the people out there who are actively helping people?
Well, that's a good question, because I thought about that before we came on today. And, you know, I had to do quite a bit of quite a search just to find some help that knew some truth to help me. And that's been a big investment on their time and mine. But you know, the first things that were spoken to me by more than just Fern and Audrey, because there was another ministry who connected me to them, and they lovingly told me the same thing. You know, please consider not using the deliverance model with these folks. It can really be re-traumatizing. My first point would be that really it doesn't have to look like that. And darkness wants to do anything to torment and mislead and make something worse or mock or make fun of. And this kind of work can be done without the spiritual aspect of that, twisting the body and tormenting the person and all of that. For the deliverance minister or the person who really is, I think, and I would hope in most cases, lovingly coming alongside people with very real spiritual issues, the first thing to realize is that it's not going to take you to help take care of that darkness. Jesus loves that person enough to help them with understanding so that the darkness will fall back. And one thing, just like Fern just referenced the empowerment of the survivor when they understand that that's theirs to hold to. Well, when I sit with someone and they think that, you know, they come in with a sense of shame because they think they have demons. And if I go in as a deliverance minister and I say, well, I'm the one who can help you with this. And it's really a feeling of like a position of dominance over that person. If the person that I'm working with happens to be a survivor, that feels very much like the perpetrators that they dealt with from the very beginning. And so we really need to realize that we're coming alongside a person in love. And one of the first things, another thing that I never forgot, Fern saying the first time I met her in person, and she looked at me and at everybody in the room and said, you know what? We're on equal couches here. And I think that when we walk into a room with someone who's hurting and who needs help when they're scared and they didn't know where they could find help, the first thing you're there to do is to love them. And those are some of my first words too. You know, look, I'm here to be with you on your journey. I'm alongside you. I know you're going to have questions. I'll help you with some understanding about that. The first of all, to help them understand that they're loved and you're with them. And when you don't have the answers, you'll do your best to help find them. And on the ups and the downs, you're with them. But not to be there to cast out demons or to, I mean, I'll literally, if they persist, I'll say, I don't do that. And so it's hard on a short, you know, on a short broadcast like this, we can't really go through all the steps of what it looks like to do it differently completely, but it will be different to first understand that it's not necessary to get wonderful progress alongside somebody in love without doing deliverance, and that deliverance can be harmful and usually is in some way. And that you're dealing neck and neck with darkness, who by nature is deceiving. So why are we doing that? We need to ask ourselves that. The truth, and the person understanding their beliefs and asserting their will is enough in that situation for the darkness to fall back. And then it's our responsibility to not forget the importance of the healing journey on the other side of that for that person, because there will be very real pain and there will be very real experiences they went through that they went through alone and never thought they could get help with. So once that process of getting out from under darkness is done, we need to remember that that's not the end. It's just the beginning of a new phase of healing for that person.
And Trey, I would just answer that question by saying one of the most exciting things for us was to be able to see the perspective from the divine counsel and to see the bigness of who Jesus is, to understand his sovereignty and providence, and to approach this with a worldview from that perspective rather than trying to figure out a demonic hierarchy and try to undo it from that place. So it was really easy. We just go to the one who's in charge of it all. And it's just simple. It's a different viewpoint.
Yeah, and I would say in the deliverance model is the things that they're trying to cast out is, it is really the parts of the people that are in torment. And so darkness will pull back and they are harming humanity because of the trauma that the person has survived. Mm-hmm. And darkness will always pull back and let humanity take the barrage of deliverance being done to them.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting to hear all of that, but in particular, the whole hierarchy thing. Again, since I'm not a practitioner, but I get asked questions about hierarchy a lot, and so that helps me understand why are people asking why is there such an interest in this? Well, if your model, either in whole or in part, needs to discern some sort of hierarchy so that you can do X, Y, or Z, I understand now why you want to know. And it's kind of interesting, isn't it interesting in Scripture that we're told very little of that? Now, again, I'm going to be daring here and say that might suggest that the information isn't needed. In other words, if God wanted us to know that, there was some reason in the mind of God that, down the road, they're going to need to know this hierarchy with a high degree of specificity. So let's give that to them. And he would prompt a writer to include that. But he doesn't do that. So I'm bold enough to suggest that if it's not there, it's probably something that's not essential.
Mike, that teaching that you gave us in 2010 about that information was key. And that's what really helped us, because we were, in fact, taught to that there was a hierarchy and these are the ones mentioned. And it was absolutely work and labor intensive mm-hmm. to learn different yeah. gospel.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, does anyone have anything to add? Anything you feel needs to be put into the conversation at this point? Again, I think for the sake of our listeners, I think the key points are about, again, emphasizing, what is my, how committed to truth am I? And truth, again, for our purposes, really needs to be rooted in the text of Scripture, not an experience and not a tradition. That doesn't mean mm-hmm. those other two things are always hopelessly wrong. Of course, they're not. That would be a tremendous overstatement. But, when push comes to shove, where is our locus of authority, when it comes to these things? How are we trying to root what we think and what we do on the basis of what we think, into the text? So that, I think, is a real important element. And then again, just to see the value in the big picture. All of you have mentioned the big picture at some point, but just how God looks at us and how God looks at the world. What the end game is, what the game plan is, what the strategy is. We don't want to unpack different facets of that. But I think it's really hit home to me that how important it is to go from "Oh, God loves you," which is certainly true, to this is when God looks at you. Here are the thoughts that He thinks. and just to unpack that and see how it's sort of, where it's situated in the lay of the theological land, God's plan with greater totality seems to be real helpful.
Mike, can I comment on that just real quick?
Sure.
I was actually sitting here just thinking about the aspect of Christians and how we, the churches, they'll give out spiritual gift assessments. You can test yourself. You can claim a gift. You can say, it's clearly in the Bible. Scripture talks about the giftedness of the church. But the thing is that what we forget is He really does say the greatest of these is love. And I never really understood that until I was walking in ministry this way. And what forgot about this until just now, but my dad, even the summer after my freshman year in college, sat me down and told me about my gift of love and how that was so important in my life. And now to understand that really all of those gifts that I thought that I had or that I needed to have or that I prayed for, aren't even necessarily, he will bring what he needs in the moment that he needs, because the giftedness is actually the love, and that's what he is. So it's just existing in him. Whatever gift he is in the moment is what our anointing is, and it's him. That's it. And we don't need to be distracted by what is your anointing, or you're so anointed, or what are your gifts, and that kind of thing. It's really about walking in love.
Or do you see how well that fits with imaging?
Yes.
I mean, you are to be what God is at any given point. These are things that you could sit around in a classroom and talk about. But here, you know, these are examples where, you know, you see the practicality of it, and not only the practicality of it, but, and I'm not saying it's easy, but the achievableness of it. You know, again, that doesn't mean it's easy, because, I mean, you guys would be the first to tell us all that this is pretty hard, mm-hmm. You know, but it's not impossible. Hard and impossible are two different things. Yeah. Well, thanks to everybody for sharing part of their day to do this. And I don't have to hope that it will be valuable to listeners. I'm sure there will be people out there who saw themselves somewhere in the conversation. And I know it will be valuable. If you're interested in the ministry that Fern and Audrey and, of course, Beth have, and again, we're trying to help there financially, you could look that up on my website. You could either search for Fern and Audrey in the search field, or go to the podcast episode that sort of started that all off, which was, I think, Trey, correct me if I'm wrong, number 68, correct?
Correct.
That's the episode. So you could go back and listen to that episode as well. But if you search for it on my website, you will find links to where we're taking tax-deductible donations for Fern and Audrey's clients. And also, again, Beth's as well. If we need to send money in that direction, we'll certainly do that. So just, again, if you saw yourself in here, you saw somebody else, and you want to find out more information, please, you know, by all means, do those things. So thanks, everybody, for doing this again.
You're welcome, Mike.
I can try.
All right, yeah, well, I appreciate everything y'all are doing. So, you know, thank y'all.
All right,
you're welcome. Good.
Thank you, guys.
Yep, see you guys soon.
Yep.
All right.
Okay, Mike, yeah, another good show. I think people will be interested to hear that. I think the more we talk about that, the more understanding people will have of what they're doing and what we're doing. And I really walked away with, you know, that darkness will pull back and let the person take the brunt of deliverance when you try to do deliverance ministry. So that spoke to me, and empowering the person to take charge of their healing rather than having to go through this whole torment of deliverance. You know, I'm starting to understand a little bit better of what's involved and what they do. And, you know, so that's great. And
yeah, it took me, you know, 3 or 4 sessions with them. I mean, I go out every year and spend time with Fern and Audrey, and we talk and do some teaching. So it took, you know, 3 or 4 of those times, you know, to really kind of understand what it was they were doing.
Yeah, I certainly can see that. And again, if you're interested in getting in touch with Fern and Audrey and Beth, please email me at treystrickland@gmail.com. You can get that email on nakedbiblepodcast.com. Well, next week, we're back into Ezekiel, correct?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, well.
2 more chapters.
All righty. Well, good. I'll look forward to it. Well, we certainly appreciate Fern, Audrey, and Beth coming on and talking about what they do. And just want to thank everybody else for listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. God bless.
Thanks for listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. To support this podcast, visit www.nakedbibleblog.com. To learn more about Dr. Heiser's other websites and blogs, go to www.drmsh.com.